thank the Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Caucus public health workers for the opportunity to present findings from this rather important but very quiet topic. I first became aware of transgendered individuals, particularly our youth, who are injecting adulterated silicone to feminize or to masculinize their physical appearance to best match whom they felt they were on the inside. And I learned about pumping parties in a news article, and I thought, well, this is an incredible topic. Let me begin to see if there is anything in Chicago that we need to be aware of. And then that began my exploration on this particular topic. So this was an exploratory study. There are plenty of clinical data, there are news articles, there's anecdotal data in the transgender-friendly magazines to indicate that this is a public health crisis. But nowhere do we see in the public health literature to date where this is being addressed. These individuals represent just a very small drop in the bucket of individuals who have died as a result from injection silicone. And this is within the last 7 years, which is seeing an increase of individuals from secondary to injection silicone. And all this information is from the clinical data. Some of it has been supported by the trans data as well. So some of the reasons individuals are injecting silicone from the clinical research as well as the small exploratory study that I did was to increase their sense of self-esteem, that if they were survival sex workers, they were playing the role. It was to increase marketability so that they can appear whom that individual wanted. And also it was an opportunity, it was a desire, just a strong desire to transition, more cost-effective perhaps for them than SRS, sex reassignment surgery, or plastic surgery, or therapeutic hormones. Just some very tight background on silicone, and just to make the distinction between adulterated silicone, silicone that is mixed with impurities, unknown substances with unknown effects such as paraffin oil, and this goes back centuries, this is nothing new. Cleopatra goes all the way back to Egyptian times when people were injecting all sorts of things, and I read peanut butter under the skin to create this facade, this individual whom they felt that they wanted to be. So this isn't anything new. The silicone that I'm talking about is unencapsulated. It's free, goes directly into the body. For some trans, again, they are injecting because it is a cost-effective means, and this particularly affects our vulnerable transgendered youth who don't have a language to describe how they're feeling, perhaps, who don't understand or don't have an idea of the health education implication involved with the adulterated injection silicone. And this made me scream. When I began to learn more about this, I was really shocked, and this really hurt my feelings to know that these individuals, according to the research, are flying in and they're flying right back out. There are no medical safeguards. They're not practicing safely. They're not licensed to do anything. There is no health history, so we have no idea who's going to get sick and who isn't. There is no screening. There is no opportunity for patient education, which is extremely important when providing care. Again, looking at the clinical data and then talking to a forensic pathologist in Texas who autopsied three individuals, three trans men who had died as a result of this. And I asked, well, what did you see? What were your findings? How did they die and why did they die? And this is essentially what she said, was that once the silicone goes into the body, goes directly sub-Q under the skin, that's invasive. And then your little macrophages, they try to eat all of this up, but unfortunately they can't eat all of it. So imagine all of this free stuff going into the body, unknown substance, cut with unknown products, and then the body wages an attack trying to get rid of it. And because it goes in so great amount, liters, just so great amount, and that translates to cups. So imagine someone is putting cups and cups of this fluid into their body. And then it goes into the bloodstream, and then it goes into the tissues, and goes into organs. and the stuff is not good. We need health education. We need policy. We need an understanding. Some of the health issues, and we don't have long-term studies, we don't have short-term studies on the impact of this stuff in the human body. So this right now is just based on the clinical data. We need more, again, more exploratory data, more applied health research, more population-based research to try to understand exactly what's going on here. It's an illegal process, an illegal practice, inappropriate methods, and it's definitely unhygienic. When I spoke to one trans adult about the process of cutting silicone, she mentioned that individuals are queuing up at these pumping parties or in the beauty salon or any place that they can, this underground silicone circuit, and they ask people to lie down on a table. And you don't know if the table has been cleaned. In most cases, it hasn't been. You don't know if the operator has washed their hands, that they're complying with any CDC hand washing policy. It's just injection, getting up, and then the next person lies down, and it's a queue. It just goes on all night. Again, more health issues with IS. And speaking to some of my respondents, they indicated that they knew someone who had injected silicone and was HIV positive and was taking antiretroviral drugs. We have no idea the drug-to-drug interaction between the two. Again, no long-term studies, and we certainly need those. ALS describes AILS as adulterated injection liquid silicone to differentiate between the micro droplet pipette procedure, which was pioneered by Dr. Orentrek in New York City. And he does use silicone. It's off-label silicone, so it's off-label for other purposes, not for the purpose that some dermatologists or plastic surgeons might be using. But the key here is that it's droplets. It's like teeny tiny droplets that he's using and not liters that a person is pumping into the body. And so these are just some of the issues, some of the health hazards with injecting silicone. They're minor, they're major, and then they're deadly. And so when you're injecting anything into the body, well, certainly you may have inflammation, you may have redness, you may have swelling. But then the major includes the migration. And in speaking to my respondents, they were very much aware, and this is the term that they used. They knew of this. It was migrating because there is so much in the body that a person might get injected in the breast, and then that stuff eventually goes to the ankles, and then the ankles are swollen. So this is their language. So they are familiar. They are aware of the health hazards. But because the need is so great for them to be whom they feel they are on the inside, they'll go ahead and inject. This is part of the operalization of silicone. Pulmonary silicone embolism, I never knew of such a thing before I started looking into the clinical literature, and then case after case after case, this is the result of injecting silicone. This is the end result. So it's congestion, it's the shortness of breath, inability to breathe, the stuff gets into the lungs, and then respiratory failure is the end, in case after case. I wanted to present some information on the impact of silicone, again, from the clinical data. This is coming from the dermatology journals, the journals of plastic surgery, nothing in the public health journals as of yet. So the 21 and the 28, they indicate years old. And so they're injecting into the face, they're injecting into the jaws, they're injecting into the breast, they're injecting anywhere. And that was one of my questions. Where are individuals injecting? And one youth said, wherever they can. This was a case in 1998 in Chicago. Just recently in 2006, there was another case. This was a Mexican female who her neighbor injected her in the breast, both bilateral breasts. And then she presented at Cook County Hospital with inflammation and swelling, and her breasts were completely red. And presented at the ER, and no one knew what to do. And so they called for a consult. And then it was the consult that I had an opportunity to talk to, and he said that this is pervasive. It's widespread in the city of Chicago. This is another case, 29 years old. This is in New York City. And I wanted to applaud the New York City Department of Health because they did release a press release in the city indicating that individuals were affected by Mycotarium abscessus because of injection silicone, and there are 4 cases that presented to hospitals in New York City. But it's only the Florida Department of Health that's actually instituted an unlicensed unit. And so only in southern Florida, if you suspect someone is injecting or if you suspect that someone is practicing without a license, you can call it in anonymously at 1-888-419-3456. And this information is on Google. When I began to look at the literature so that I can begin to justify what it is I was doing, again, lots and lots of information from the clinical literature. There were trans health studies. There were a couple of dissertations, but there was nothing. It was vacant in the public health literature. And I thought, because this seemed so widespread and because it had such a potential for health hazards, that surely my discipline was going to develop some interventions, some silicone hormone reduction, some health education. But to date, in the United States, that's not the case. It is not reportable data by the local public health department or the state health department. It is not getting into our DAWN. It is not getting into our CDC, MMWR, and it's not getting into NIDA. So we don't know who's susceptible, again, because there is no history. We don't know how many cases. And transgender are not so much a hidden population as a hiding population because of the stigma. I wanted to go back to patient safety because I think this applies. So it's not just the hospitals, but it's these makeshift clinics that we see in people's homes, at the pumping parties, at the balls, and at the events where people are pumping up, and they are not practicing any safe practices. And I think that the patient safety resolution applies here. And if you are using, and you know this from HIV/AIDS 101, that if you're using unsafe needles, this places our youth and places other trans individuals at risk for Hep B, Hep C, HIV. And so if I have to stretch to say that this is an issue that needs to have immediate attention, then I'll pull WHO, the World Health Organization, and I'll get behind their patient safety resolution. There is need for prevention. I mean, that seems obvious, but there isn't. There is no precaution. There's no prevention. Again, there is no health education, and we certainly do need that. We do need risk prevention. That we need our health educators and we need our public health workers, we need our outreach workers to be aware of this in their community, to go back to your homes, to go back to your planning groups and all your councils and your committees, and then just ask and begin to poll your trans individuals to see if this is occurring in your neighborhood. And these are just some next steps, that we do need to have some theory-based population health studies. We need to have more information. We need to have more education. And we need to get some surveillance data in the MMWR as well as in DAWN. Something that I'm trying to pull together is a transcontinental directory of plastic surgeons who do SRS, and who are willing to sit down, who are trans-friendly and willing to sit down with trans to begin to talk about the process, because this is a process, and some of our youth may think that it's just one injection that they need, and then voila, they'll be whom they feel they are, but that's not so. You know, there's many, many months and many years. This is a process, and it takes time. So some follow-up action steps. So after the conference, gather your friends and gather your coworkers, begin to talk about silicone. Adulterated silicone. Begin to develop task force in your area. Attach them to your HIV/AIDS planning committees and councils and work groups. And then advocate for, and this is the crux of it, to advocate for safer, cost-effective means for individuals to transition if they wish to transition. And then to adopt and engage trans youth. And then some additional references. If you want to have the slide presentation, by all means, please, thank you. please email me, pmwallace03@yahoo.com. Thank you.